Parshas Bo and Shemois. So it goes like this. We have said in this class many a time that when you read the 10 plagues, they are not uniformed at all. Even though the song some of us grew up with, no, 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 I would not let them go, sounds like that was the same conversation over and over 10 times, right? Moses says, let my people go. No, 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 I will not let them go. No, that's not what happened. No. They didn't repeat themselves 10 times. And if they did, the Torah certainly didn't repeat it 10 times, because the Torah doesn't repeat itself 10 times. There's no point in that. So each one of the plagues, if we superimpose the plagues on each other, you will notice differences. And you could spend a lifetime. So for example, sometimes Moshe and Aaron went to Paro to warn him about the upcoming plague. Sometimes not both of them. Sometimes both of them, one spoke, sometimes one didn't speak. Sometimes he used a stick, sometimes didn't use a stick. Sometimes the plague ended just naturally. Sometimes Moshe prayed for the plague to end. When you start superimposing, the song sounds catchy. No, 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 but that's not what happened. Every one of these is different. Now, you have to find out when you read the verses, is each place revealing what happened in nine other times? It says it once, but maybe this happened all nine other times. Or no, this event happened this one time, and then you got to figure out why. And if you go to RabbiHamda.com over the last 4 years, what has been recorded, forget the years that was not, we have discussed different things over the years in these parashas to show that not every plague is the same. Here we have an interesting thing. The end of the ninth plague. You did you? How many plagues are there?
Ten,
right, yeah.
You said
I said the end of the ninth. It's good, it's good. So the end of the ninth plague is Pharaoh is getting beaten. It's brutal, man. Frogs here, frogs there. You know that song? That's not comfortable, right? All right, we got wild. We spoke about the polar bears on ice showing up with the ice. Not comfortable. Things aren't going well. And now he's like, he's just sick of this already. So the duration of plague, Hashem strengthened Pharaoh's heart. And he did not wish to send them out. No, 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 we'll not let them go. Pharaoh said to them, listen, Moses, we're done. Go away from me. I'm paraphrasing. Article has different words. Beware. Not only go away, beware. Do not see my face anymore. It's very aggressive. It's like ex-wife stuff, right? For on the day, here goes ex-mother-in-law, on the day you see my face, you shall die. Well, now, this is serious. I mean, it took nine plagues to get it, by the way. Nine plagues. What's Moshe's reaction? I mean, they don't say the word. You have spoken correctly. I shall never see your face again. Now, Moshe says, you have spoken correctly. What is Moshe's statement, you have spoken correctly? Reality, historically, this is what's going to happen? Or, okay, you said it, what you say goes. The difference will be, let's say Pharaoh had told Moshe after the second plague, fourth plague, sixth plague, seventh plague, by the way, go from here, I never want to see your face again, the day you do, you shall die. Would that have clicked in that Moshe never would have been able to go back to Pharaoh? At this point in time, Moshe is going to walk away from Pharaoh, and that might be the end of them face to face again in history. Pharaoh started this conversation. Moses said, indeed, you have spoken correctly. Okay, you have spoken correctly. It could be done two ways. It could be, indeed, you have spoken correctly means, you're right, by the way. That's what's going to happen now. But not because you did anything. Like as you said it. It's, by the way, you know, broken clocks, right? Twice a day. You are correct, by the way. I will not see you again. But don't do it. You're irrelevant, by the way. You happen to, you got it right, by the way. Or is it, no, Pharaoh, you're still the king of Egypt. What you say goes. Two ways to understand this. Go away from me. I don't want to see your face. You'll die. You're right. I'm not going to see you again. And that's a serious question. And there are different approaches how to understand this. So we're going to back up a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of a history lesson here and come up with a wild idea. So, best how to do this. David the king was not the king yet. This is what the story of David is. David gets anointed by Shmuel HaNavi. Samuel the prophet comes to David and says, I'm anointing you as the future king. Couple of conditions. Got to keep it between me and you. That's a heavy secret to be carrying around, by the way. You got the official anointing. I don't know if that's even a word. Anointed, but no one knows yet. But what happens is there is a guy right now who's sitting on the throne. And he's getting a little suspicious. Shaul HaMelech. And then starts a lot of Shaul chasing after David. Shaul trying to get rid of David. This is going on for a while. David's in a cave. Did you learn that in Florida in high school? What did they do there? What did David do?
Son.
Father-in-law. Father-in-law, yeah, worst father-in-law ever, maybe. He's chasing him down in the cave. What happens in the cave? He cuts his clothing, takes a piece of garment, and then comes out of the cave the next day and says, look, I could have killed you. I only cut your clothing. I'm on your side, father-in-law. I'm not trying to do anything. This happens a couple times. David has Saul in his crosshairs and does nothing. So the question becomes, okay, the law in Judaism is, we believe this, 101, someone comes to kill you, kill him first. Kill him first. So one of the commentators, 1600, 1700, asks, David, it's very cute. Cut the cloth, it's cute. But you know what? Saul's trying to kill you. You know what the law says? Kill him first. Why not kill him? There's not time for cutesy stuff. The guy pulls a gun on you, shoot him. If the guy pulls a gun on you and then starts walking away with his back to you, can't shoot him, because that's not trying to kill you. When the person is in the act of attempting to kill you, you're allowed to kill him. Saul's trying to kill him.
That's a spot on that. So maybe ask about.
So this is a serious question. We have some serious questions. How are you reading this? What's going on here? So there's an unbelievable idea from the Yavetz. 1700. The Yavetz says this idea. When David got anointed with the special oil, and he knew he's going to be king at one point in time, was he king yet? No. But he knew at one point he had to be king. That's in the cards. There's no going around from that. He is guaranteed king, which means on some level right now, he has super powers. He's Batman, Superman, whatever combined. He's unkillable because the prophecy never happened. So in David's eyes, he knows that Saul is trying to kill him, but Saul's not trying to kill him. The only time you're allowed to shoot the guy is when he's trying to kill you, and he can kill you, obviously. If the guy comes to you with a water gun, you can't shoot him. There's no excuse. If you know it's a water gun, obviously. You can't shoot the guy. He said, well, he pointed a water gun at me. Yeah, okay. That's not what it means. It doesn't matter if he points a gun at you, or he points a real gun at you. So David's in the cave, and Saul's trying to kill him. Saul doesn't know this. Saul's really, really trying to kill him. But you know what happened if Saul had a gun and would have shot him? Would have had some Bugs Bunny and the ricochet bullet, right? It couldn't have hit David. David knew this. He had the anointed oil. He knew no matter what, he can't get killed. He knew no matter what, he can't get killed. He has no right to kill the guy coming to kill him, because he's not going to kill him. When someone's really coming to kill you, kill him first. When he thinks he's coming to kill you, but he doesn't, if you know the guy's holding a gun with blanks in it, can't shoot him. You know there are blanks. He doesn't know that, unless blanks can kill, like in that movie Set. I knew you were thinking Alec Baldwin. But no, let's ignore that for a second. Let's say the guy has nothing. I don't know what blanks look at. He's got the empty gun. You know that. They have all these TV shows where the guy emptied the gun and he pretended that the gun was full to test the guy. The guy turns the gun. If you know there's nothing in the gun, can you empty out the bullets? You can't shoot the guy. Because you know the truth. He's not trying to kill you. I mean, he's trying to kill you, but he can't kill you at that moment in time. So David HaMelech had superpowers at that point in time. Based on the fact of his major superpowers, untouchable, can't kill Saul. Okay. We discussed two weeks ago, that Amram, man who died with no sins, one of four, divorced his wife. He said, you know what? This Egyptian Holocaust ain't good. We're not bringing kids into this. And they separate, and they divorce. So now, Amram separated from his wife. And then what happened was his daughter came over to him and said, what are you doing? Do you know what you're supposed to produce? The word she uses is you're supposed to produce the Mashiach Shal Yisrael, the Redeemer of Klal Yisrael, the Redeemer. Moshe Rabbeinu comes out of the womb. The house is lit up. Major events happening here. He's the Redeemer of Klal Yisrael. Crazy events. A couple months later, she decides to put him into the ocean. She puts him to the Nile. Why? She's afraid of what? Moshe Rabbeinu, right now, did he redeem Klal Yisrael yet? No. Is he not in the same situation David is in the back of the cave? Moshe Rabbeinu is untouchable. Does it find it strange at all that Moshe Rabbeinu is walking into Pharaoh's house, out of Pharaoh's house, into Pharaoh's house, out of Pharaoh's house? By the way, king, do X or else. When, how often do you think people walked into Pharaoh, threatened the king, and walked out, and got back in the next day? Sometimes with his brother. What is going on here? What Moshe Rabbeinu is defying the whole situation here. It's like a joke. All the Jews should have said, wait a second, but let me try that. You know, let me try that one. That's always never a good idea, right? Moshe's walking in, threatening the king, and walking out. That's unbelievable. So why? How? How's this happening? You got to read about Pharaoh has thrones, by the way. Lions in front of the people who step forward. The lions eat them. Moshe Rabbeinu is walking in, plaguing him, if that's even a verb, right? Smoting him. Is that a verb? I don't know these words. And nothing's happening. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was untouchable. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was given a prophecy, not him directly, there was a prophecy that he is going to be the redeemer of Klal Yisrael, meant he's Superman. He is no different. The Chumash says that right after next week's parsha, it says, after the song of the Shira, these are the words writing it out right now on 1520, and Miriam the prophetess, sister of Aaron, took the drum in her hand, and all the women went forth and sang. We describe Miriam as a prophetess, sister of Aaron. At that time, who was she a sister of? So is it odd that it says prophetess, sister of Aaron? It should have said prophetess, sister of Aaron and Moshe, or Moshe and Aaron. Why does it say prophetess, sister of Aaron? She was a prophet at one point when only Aaron was alive. Let's see if Oscar says it. She is not called Moses' sister because her first prophecy was before he was born when she was only the brother of Aaron. Because years later, no, something else. Fine, but that first part. So at one point, the Torah says Miriam was a prophet, sister of Aaron. Talmud tells us that when they separated, she turned to her father and says, listen, I got to tell you something. You are going to produce the redeemer of the Jewish nation. Get back together. The house gets lit up. Moshe Rabbeinu is walking around fully protected. You know what happens at one point, by the way? Do you remember that story? Where he kills a guy and they try to slice his neck off? Yeah. He walked out of that unscathed. This has to be one of these sci-fi movies. Now that I'm missing out. Oh, I'm not remembering. There's got to be one of these movies. The guy's untouchable. Point is now that Moshe Rabbeinu is walking around. He is untouchable. Untouchable. Neck hard, walking out of Pharaoh.
That would have been a prophecy.
That's part of the prophecy because Aaron was born already. She was saying, you must get back together to produce the child.
It says, because you're killing all the girls, but now you're
no, it says above. We last week, 2 weeks ago, we focused on the other part of that Gemara. Yes. If you look at the Gemara 12b in Sota, and then 13a on top is where it says those words. So we have Moshe Rabbeinu now being a total star here. And it says here, she could not hide him any longer. Not an accurate statement. She could not hide him. It's not true. He was untouchable. So she took him from the wicker basket, the whole thing over there. Pharaoh's daughter went down. Look what it says here. She saw a basket among the reeds. Sent her maidservant. She took it. She opened it and saw him. And behold, it was behold in English. Behold means something brand new, shocking. The word vihine means something I never had before. Behold, a youth was crying. Took pity on him. So she opens the basket and baby Moshe, if you can call him that, is crying. Vihine, when she opened the basket, he was crying. When was he crying? When she opened the basket or before she opened the basket? If you're walking toward a basket of a baby, I don't know who has nephews and nieces here, you would hear the crying before you, depends how loud the baby's crying, right? But most of the time you're going to hear it before you open it. It seems from the word Vihine, behold, Moshe Rabbeinu was not crying until that moment. That's a pretty, you know, stark reaction. You want to go with the baby, googie, googie, and the baby starts crying. Why is the baby crying now? What's going on here? The baby should have been crying all the time. So our questions are, why was he put into the river at all? There's nothing to be afraid of. You can't drown that kid. You can't shoot him. There's that famous Saturday Night Live skit where they had Donahue. I'm aging myself. I've got to find this clip. Phil Donahue. Too young. Phil Donahue interviewing all the James Bond villains. I remember this from like a kid. It was such a great scene. He's in the old, and he's like, he buzzes with the microphone, Donahue, and he turns to like Dr. No. I don't know what the names of all the, I never really watched Bond. All the Bond guys. He goes, so what did you do wrong? And he's going, and he turns to one guy and goes, so what do you got to do to kill James Bond? And he goes, just kill him. Don't put poison down a thread through the night while he's sleeping. Just shoot him. And the other guy, you don't need a car that's spitting it. And they're going through all the weird ways that all these bad guys try to kill. And the other guy, just shoot him. There is an idea. Just shoot him. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, nothing was going to work. Try to chop his neck off, marble. Try to drown him, we'll go into reality. He floats and the woman comes and takes him out. It doesn't make a difference. Anything he would have done, he would have been saved. Nothing. So what are you afraid of? What are you putting him in there for? We said in the past, the story from Rabbi Arla Belz that they say over. Rabbi Arla Belz, the great who survived the Holocaust to the Bochnia ghetto, one of the spooks of the spooks, books of all the scary stuff he's done. And at one point, he was stopped by the Hungarian border and they were about to get caught. He was escaping. The Germans were looking for him. You read the book, the bells escapes. This, I forgot, the article has a thing of it. I have it in my Agada. If the Agada showed a picture. One of the great gripping novels of all time. Real story. With a grand superstar rabbi. His car was invisible at one point. Crazy stuff. And at one point they stop by a border and three people on horses come by. Generals. Let this guy through. And he turned to his brother who was with him and said, that's our father, grandfather, great-grandfather. The three first rebbes of Belz. Belz is a dynasty. Crazy stuff. And the legend was that at the end of his life, at the end of his trip, when they were crossing into Turkey, so the Hungarian double agent who had snuck him out from Poland all the way through turned to the Rebbe and said, listen, you're a wonder, Rabbi. You have something to you. I need a blessing from you because this is like insane. I'm watching what happened last few days. I'm like, it's bewildering. He writes, at times they were driving, there was only rain on top of his car. That's what he writes. They were driving and there was no rain around. They're looking through, everything's sunny, their car's rain on it. And he said it was an invisible mist. Crazy stuff. And the Rebbe turned to him and said to him, you help me, I give you a blessing. He asked him if he could say over the story, and he said, wait till the war's over, something like that. And then he said to him, you'll die in a bed. And the guy's like, seriously? The genie in the bottle, and that's what I got? I die in bed? So anticlimactic. And then years later, this is the legend, they found this guy, he was living in Brazil or something. And they got an interview with this guy, and they're like, we want to hear your version of what was going on when the Rebbe was getting out, because the Rebbe really spoke about it. One of his weird things, he said, the past is in the past. Interesting, the Rebbe was so above reality. You have to, it's worth reading the book, I'm telling you. And it's taken from the Hebrew books. That's why it's beautiful. It's a real Hebrew biography that was written by people who were there, and then they translate to English so they couldn't bluff it up. It was real. And he said, I was in a plane that crashed, only survivor. Motorcycle accident, doing 120, fell off, walked out without a scratch. And at one point, this guy starts realizing, wait a second, I'm going to die in my bed. This is great. This is great. Like, you know, he's walking through, there's like a shootout in the old West K Corral. He's like walking through, I have a donut. I'm like, well.
You definitely went past it.
But you're like, you don't realize it. And he's like going through this because in the end, the blessing of the rabbi was like, yeah, I can go onto a plane. Yeah, the plane's going down. Oh, I'm looking, you're not going to drink it anyway. You're not going to make it. I'll take it. I'll take the double snacks on the plane. Moshe Rabbeinu is in this situation. So what is going on? They're scared. They're putting him in the basket. They're crying. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, 1973, during the Yom Kippur War, Grand Rabbi of Mir Yeshiva, among the Grand Rabbis, he gave a few shmuzen about how to respond to the scary times. 1973 was scary. 67 before you woke up was over. 73 was scary. And he was giving shmuzen in the Yeshiva. And at one point, he's writing, like, one American boy's like, I want to go back. My parents are like, get back to America. And he says, your obligation is to pray for the land, for the soldiers, for the situation. And you're going to tell me you'll go back to America and pray? Doesn't work that way. In order to successfully pray, you have to be praying in the situation. At one point, he seems to express, Sammy should have came tonight, that if someone wants to properly pray for the soldiers, every once in a while, pick that word, what it means, he should go out to the front, go out to the battlefield. Feel it. Understand it. That's the way you're supposed to pray. Chaim Shmulevitz, 1973. Why? Because when you want to pray, you got to have the right intentions, and that's the way to do it. When you're sitting in your home on carpet, there's no carpet in Israel, right? When you're getting out of your bed and getting onto carpet, and you're checking your YouTube shorts, you're not really praying the right way. Except my YouTube shorts. So it could be my idea that Miriam HaNeviya knew that Moshe is untouchable. A blessing from the Belzer Rebbe is like gold. But when God tells you you're going to redeem the Jews, you're going to redeem the Jews. Not much you can do about it. You're not slipping on a banana. So, but she said, wait a second. How are you going to be a redeemer for the Jews? You know what I got to do? There's a decree out there right now that says every baby in the river, drown them all. You know what she says to Moshe Rabbeinu? Get in there. Yeah, you're untouchable. You're not going to drown, but get in there. Feel it. Experience it. Know what it's about. We discussed last year or 2 years ago that every plague affected the Jews for 1 second. Get in there. And Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. But what happens is he's in there. He's praying quietly. And all of a sudden, the veil comes off. Veil? Cover comes off. And he sees the daughter of Pharaoh. And you know what he realizes right now? It's a chess match. I know what's happening now. She's taking me out of the water. I'm going to lose this ability. Behold, he begins crying. He wasn't crying for seeing her face. He wasn't crying the whole time. Now he says, you know why I'm crying? Because my prayers are not the same level. He's either crying because he's going to miss out on that level, or the crying was to make it a better level. I'm on both sides of that one. The crying was now to say my prayers got to get better because I'm not in the situation. You're not in the gas chamber. You're not feeling it. You're reading it in the New York Times. It doesn't do anything for you. The people in America in the 1940s used to say, we had it tough. You know, they had rations on electricity. Brutal. Brutal of the survivors who came across. One of the reasons they didn't talk about it. I spoke to a survivor once. He told me, when we came across, trying to describe what we went through, the reaction of the people in America at the time was like, yeah, you know, we had it tough also. We had it tough also. We couldn't have our Yom Kippur ball. So Moshe Rabbeinu starts crying. But he learned his lesson. His mother taught him that if you want to be the Redeemer, the way to do it, feel it. Do you know what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu grows up. A few psukim later, it's a couple years later. And it happened in those days that Moshe grew up. What does he do? He went out to his brethren and observed their burdens. He knew what was going on. But you don't pray from the palace. You don't pray from the carpet. You got to get out there. So maybe he could have prayed from the palace. Maybe he was also. But that's not what it says. He grew up and he went out to his brethren and observed it. You got to be part of the system. Now he can't be beaten up. He's the palace. He's the prince. But he's got to be in the system. The fact is, every one of us, we've said in the past, is a leader on some level. In your own home, do I eat this food? Do I not do this? Do I do this? You're a leader on yourself. Every one of us has a part of us, a portion of us, that will help the redemption come as leaders also. As leaders also. But in order to do that, what does the first mother tell us? If you want to be the leader, you got to pray and feel it. Be invested in it. So that's what we have to work on. Investing ourselves. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Pharaoh, you have nothing on me. I go in and out as I want. You can't touch me. I know that. You know that. Pharaoh knows that. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu have to do? You're untouchable. That's not enough. You're untouchable yourself. You got to get everyone else out. How are you going to get everyone else out? You're going to pray properly. Praying properly means get into denial. But our point, our lesson right now tonight is going to be, for all of us, by the way. I mean, they have all these stories of these seven-year-olds who are like, I'm not sleeping with a pillow when the war began. You read these stories, it's depressing knowing how pathetic we are as people. But yeah, you read these stories of the seven-year-old says, oh, there's a war. You know what? I'm not going to eat donuts. They have all these stories. There is a way. Now, we're living here. We're living here. So we're feeling it less. Okay, you have a kid in the army, so you're feeling a little, you're more feeling it than I am. Obviously, you know, depends how much you're invested in your feeling situation. But the point is, if we want to be the leadership, each one on our own pathway, each one of us as a little leader, our piece of the puzzle inside the big mosaic, the way we got to do it is to pray correctly with the right amount of intent and save us all.